Welcome to episode 5 of the She Recovery Podcast, hosted by me, Crystal Renaud Day. For those who don't know, I'm an author, speaker, certified coach, and master's level pastoral counselor with over a decade of experience working with women facing pornography addiction and other unwanted sexual behaviors. You can learn more about my work and the services we offer at SheRecovery.com. Before I introduce this week's guest, I wanted to take a moment and give all of you wonderful listeners a shout out. At the time of this recording, we're 1 month and 4 episodes in on this little show of ours, and we've received over 1,200 downloads. In the grand scheme of podcasts, maybe that isn't the highest number in the world, but you know what? For a podcast as specific as this one, I'm thrilled to think that roughly 300 of you are finding this show worth your time each week. So thank you very much for tuning in, and I will continue to create content as much as I am able. We've also received some very nice reviews on Apple Podcasts. One in particular had to say that this podcast is such an encouragement. It's hard to find a podcast that talks about women struggling with pornography, and this podcast does just that. Gospel-centered and will leave you encouraged in Christ. Personally, I can't think of a better review than that. So thank you very, very much to the person who submitted that review. And if you are enjoying the podcast, please follow us on your favorite podcast app. Leave a review or a rating if your app allows for that. And if you really, really love the podcast, I ask you to please consider making a contribution. There are many ways in which your contribution will be used, but in no small part, it will be allocated to advertising costs to help spread the word about this podcast, and it will be used to further expand our offerings here at She Recovery, including scholarships for virtual meetings and counseling services. To that effect, we have a brand new Patreon page where you can get exclusive benefits, including never-before-heard content from me, and even brand new stickers, and even a t-shirt that I've designed that you can only get as a patron. So check it out at patreon.com/SheRecovery, or follow the link in the show notes. And now, please enjoy my conversation with Jay Stringer. It's not often that we're going to have a man in this space here at She Recovery Podcast, but I know you're really going to enjoy this one. On this week's episode, you will hear from Jay Stringer. Jay is a licensed mental health counselor, ordained minister, and the author of the award-winning book, Unwanted: How Sexual Brokenness Reveals Our Way to Healing. Unwanted is based on a multi-year research project on over 3,800 men and women to address the key drivers of unwanted sexual behavior, be that the use of pornography, infidelity, or buying sex. Jay holds an MDiv and Master in Counseling Psychology from the Seattle School of Theology and Psychology, and received postgraduate training under Dr. Dan Allender while serving as a senior fellow at the Allender Center. Jay lives in New York City with his wife Heather and their 2 children. Jay, thank you so much for being a part of the She Recovery Podcast. It's really an honor to get to chat with you this morning.
Crystal, thank you so much for having me on your podcast. It's so good to be with you.
Oh, of course. Thank you. So just to dive right into things, beginning a couple of years ago, I was repeatedly hearing about this book called Unwanted from this guy named Jay Stringer. So many of my clients were talking about it and bringing it to me as something that had been really helping them. So naturally, I wanted to look into it for myself. Mm-hmm. And what I found was really an incredibly well-written book on unwanted sexual behavior from a counselor who had seen client upon client upon client come into his office with sexual addiction, compulsion issues. And as Josh McDowell endorsed it, you know, you engage the why beneath our sexual shame with groundbreaking research and the wisdom of a counselor. And so ultimately, I'd love for you just to talk a little bit about what made you pursue this area of counseling specifically once you started seeing all these clients come in. And then how did facing your own sexual shame help you in this work?
Great questions. So the first thing that I would say is I was involved with a church community in the North Seattle area, and we were a community that was really trying to address issues of homelessness, women in prostitution, drug addiction in our neighborhood. And it was through that the city of Seattle actually reached out to us and said, hey, we have a significant problem with men who buy sex. Could someone from your community talk about the neighborhood impact of Johns and men who buy sex for this class that we're about to start called a John School? And so I got involved with the City of Seattle John School, eventually became the sex addiction therapist for the City of Seattle. And that was really my first front row seat into just pattern recognition of, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of times whether it's buying sex, unwanted sexual behavior of using pornography, extramarital affairs, we almost always kind of look at it from a perspective of moral failure and what's wrong with these people. Mm-hmm. And yet, as I was beginning to engage these men's stories, I just started seeing so many childhood drivers of very similar stories of abandonment in childhood, and then oftentimes sex or some type of sexual behavior was one of their first experiences of being seen, of experiencing desire, and then it would eventually grow into a problem in their life that was causing a lot of harm, not only to themselves, but also to women. And so I think I'm a little bit like a detective and a little bit like an anthropologist. And I am just so insatiably curious about why do people do what they do. And so I remember, you know, like when the Somali pirates were pirating ships off of the Somali coast, I was just so intrigued as to what's the backstory of these pirates? Like, what's going on in Somalia that promotes this kind of stuff? Yeah. And so that coupled with, you know, just some of the research that's out there from Barna, you know, that 57% of our pastors are struggling with porn, 64% of our youth pastors, 2/3 of the church, 1/3 of pornography users are now women. Mm-hmm. So we know that pornography is a very ubiquitous issue in our world. And yet most of the research that I was looking at did not at all ask the why. Like, why would someone be drawn to this? What's happening culturally and within our own stories that's driving people to it? And so that was the impetus for me to do some original research. And I had about 4,000 men and women contribute to this body of work, which was just incredible. And I asked a lot of questions, like, what was your relationship like with your mom and your dad? What were some of those formative experiences that you went through, like childhood sexual abuse or bullying? And then what were people dealing with in the present, from shame to a lack of purpose in their life? And then I asked some questions that some people said they felt was fairly invasive, where I just asked, you know, people to share some of the specifics of what they actually look for in pornography, that a lot of the major porn sites actually keep track of all that data and what men and women are likely to seek out in porn. And so my research looked at what could someone's arousal template or the things that they found sexually tempting, what could that all that teach us. And so that was the gist of my book, Unwanted, and the research is that our unwanted sexual behavior, our use of pornography, is not random. It's a direct reflection of the parts of our story that remain unaddressed. And to me, this is just, you know, so important, is that we don't need to position unwanted sexual behaviors as this thing that's going to be like a life sentence to sexual shame or addiction. We can actually allow the struggles, the antagonists of people's lives, to be a roadmap to healing. And that's kind of the message that I want to shout from the mountaintop of, you know, struggles are how we grow. Sexual shame is so often one of the places that we begin to experience something of the kindness of God. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just really passionate about pivoting that conversation from, this is an issue, I'm always going to struggle with it, I'm so broken, to know what is your brokenness trying to communicate to you about the nature of healing and redemption that God would have for you. So that was the backstory of the research. And then you had asked about just my own sexual shame.
Yeah. How did facing your own sexual shame help you do this work in a greater way?
Yes. I mean, probably very similar to you, Crystal. Like, we didn't write our books thinking like, this is exactly what I envisioned for myself when I was in 15, 16 years old.
No, definitely not.
These are the last things we wanted to be talking about at that age. And yet, I think part of what I recognized when I got into my own therapy was that so much of my life was an attempt to try to flee and outrun shame. And so, you know, growing up as a pastor's kid, growing up as a Christian, there was just this consistent two-step dance between, on one hand, I'm presenting as a faithful son, I'm presenting as someone who I think genuinely did care about the gospel. And yet at the same time, I had these secrets. I had these things that I just wanted to hide from my life. And in the midst of therapy, one of the questions that my therapist asked me was just to tell me a little bit about my fantasy life and some of the themes that I was pursuing. Well, at the time, I would say that some of the specific search for terms that I was looking at involved just more mother figures. There's a genre of porn called MILF, or just kind of different fantasies of women that I was interacting with. And so this was something that I just felt so tremendously ashamed of, you know, I'm purporting to be a Christian, and yet so much of the way that I'm relating to women is just incredibly sexualized. And I didn't know what to do with that. And so part of my own story was that I had a fairly enmeshed, I would say, triangulated relationship with my mom, where in the midst of so many of the breakdown within my parents' marriage, my dad would, you know, go off and attend to a lot of pastoral duties, as was pretty consistently busy. And in the midst of that, I think that was part of my role in my family, which was to get a sense of, how is my mom doing? Is she angry? Is she sad? Does she need help around the house? Does she need, you know, her 11-year-old son to be a counselor in this moment? Yeah. And so what I didn't have words for at the time was that, you know, my relationship with my mom and the role that I learned how to play gave me tremendous counseling gifts to be able to see and to anticipate needs in people's lives. But that was also affecting my sexual life. It seemed like indirectly, but it had a direct correlation. And so that was really the turning point for my sexual shame, was to recognize that the specifics of my sexual fantasies, the specifics of the way that I was relating to women, was not random. It was actually a clarion call for me to address some really unhealthy dynamics that had emerged with my mom and I. And that was, again, just the turning point where, oh, my sexual struggles, my sexual shame are actually telling me a story. Mm-hmm. And if I cannot just be sidelined by shame, but go back to what the stories are that are being revealed, then I can find healing. And that was I would say, the beginning of my path towards healing and restoration.
Wow. Well, thank you for that. I mean, I resonate with that so much personally with my own family and my own dynamics, mm-hmm. And how my own struggles came to be as a result. So just to kind of segue a little bit, I do want mm-hmm. to touch on a little bit. So the research you did for Unwanted, you didn't just survey men, which thank you for that. It seems to be the popular thing to do. So thank you for bringing women into that conversation. But yes. When did you begin to realize that unwanted sexual behaviors were not just issues for men, but women were also struggling with them?
Thankfully, I went to a seminary where the adage was, you can take no one further than you have been yourself. Mm-hmm. And so the seminary grad school that I was a part of was really instrumental in inviting men and women to understand their sexual story and to begin to connect the dots. So I think in different practicums, just conversations with friends, like, it just really got a sense of all of us are sexual. And therefore, all of us are going to have unwanted sexual dimensions of our life. I think part of what I started realizing in grad school was, I mean, similar to a lot of people, was connected to the purity movement. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the purity movement has just done so much damage to people. But one of the things that I started seeing, particularly with women, was on one hand, they were chiefly responsible for the fumbling and the temptations of men. But it was framed as if, like, only men deeply struggle with pornography. And then realizing, well, what do I do if I'm a adolescent girl who seems to have more sexual temptation than even the boys and adolescents that I'm around? And so just kind of hearing some women talk about that in grad school really just opened my eyes to, whoa, this is not just a men's issue. This is true of all women as well. And I think that that's what I wanted to do in the research, was just to say, what can we learn about the family of origin of men and women that are struggling with this?
Wow. Well, I appreciate that. And I appreciate that even in your environment, you were shown that, because it's just not something I think even in general psychology training, counseling training, even in my own work, in my own training. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of counselors who reach out to me because they're not taught that women struggle in this area largely. And so they have women in their couches and their offices, and they're like, mm-hmm. I don't know what to say to her, which I'm glad yes. they're reaching out to me and that they're not just, you know, winging it or mm-hmm. dismissing them or anything like that. But there has to be more training. There has to be more awareness yes. that women struggle and that it's a different struggle, but mm-hmm. so much of the core is the same. Mm-hmm. And that we have to deal with that.
Yes. And I mean, I think this is just, I don't want to go into church history, but church history has done so much violence and degradation against women through the yeah. years. And so that's so much of what we're dealing with. Like, I mean, I think 99% of all research dollars are used for men's sexual struggles and men's yeah. sexual health. So it's like, I mean, literally every $99 that is spent on men's research and health, $1 is spent to understanding sexual health for women. So, yeah. I mean, we've just recently gotten to know female anatomy in the last decades that we've mapped out genitalia for women, which is just absolutely astounding and heartbreaking that we have not done more research and understood the lives of women.
Yes. Yeah. And I don't mind talking about the church's role in that and everything else, but it definitely is. It's a cultural issue and a church mm-hmm. issue where we're looking yes. at women as being underrepresented in all areas and not mm-hmm. being celebrated for the unique creation that they are.
So well said.
Thank you. So I do want to talk about your book some more, Unwanted. It's broken up into three sections. And what I love about this is everything about the work that I do revolves around the realization that unwanted sexual behavior, whether it's porn, affairs, compulsive masturbation, all these things, they're not about the behavior. It's a physical, emotional, and spiritual issue. What I love about your book is that you've written this book in three sections. How did I get here? Why do I stay? And how do I get out of here? And I love that. And while I'd love to sit with you for the next several hours and have you walk through each part in detail, I'll let listeners get your book and read it for themselves. But one particular area, I remember reading and yelling, yes, because I see this all the time in my own practice. And it's you saying that I have never met a client who at some level has not minimized the role their family and community of origin played in the development of their behavior. So I would love to camp out on this idea for a little bit, because you write about five key childhood drivers, and you've already alluded to this already, of unwanted sexual behavior. So do you mind walking us through what those five key areas are?
Sure. Yes. And that, I mean, that's the framework that I would want people to begin to engage these stories through, is this notion of honor and honesty. Scripture, the Bible is very clear about so much of the brokenness with regard to people's lives in the Bible. So we know that Abraham trafficked his wife at least twice. We know that he had sex with a teenage concubine. We know that the first family deeply traumatized a Egyptian female slave by the name of Hagar. So it's much more of an Eastern document than a Western document. So the notion that we know these stories of men and women in the scriptures is absolutely astounding. So scripture is always honest about the brokenness, about the heartache, about the idolatry of people. And yet there's also this very significant call to honor your mother and father, to be able to honor people of faith and to be kind to one another. And so, but most of what I have recognized is that most people are bent towards a type of honor for their mother, father, faith tradition. And yet within that honor, they do not feel the freedom to be honest about what they have suffered, and they are not even invited to understand the brokenness that they were part of. So as a general rule, it is always easier for us to recognize the harm that we have done, the sin that we have done, than it is to be able to recognize the harm and sin that has been done against us. Mm. And so this is a really significant invitation to people, is if you want to know why and where you sin, you have to begin to look at where you were sinned against. So just that notion of really inviting people to, yes, we want to honor our mother and our father. And yet what Jesus also says, unless you hate your father and mother, you can't follow me. So what that means is if your loyalty is to anything outside of Jesus, that your loyalty to Jesus and to the kingdom needs to make everything else look like hatred. That's a strong statement from Jesus. It's not what I'm saying, it's what Jesus is saying. And so that's where we have to begin of, will you begin to ponder? Will you begin to slow down to some of those stories that lacked care, that lacked kindness, in places where you may have felt humiliation, those places that you may have felt abandonment, or just that you didn't belong? And it's in the midst of those stories that we really find some of the key drivers of unwanted sexual behavior. So I'll talk about a few of them. Does that sound good?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. So the first one would be a rigid family. And a rigid family, this is based in Dr. Patrick Carnes' research, but he found that about 78% of people who struggled with unwanted sexual behaviors had families that could be characterized as rigid. In a rigid family home is where there are rules and regulations that you must follow. And if you don't follow them, you might get a a whipping, you might have some corporal punishment, you might even just not have physical punishment, but an emotional type of glare that something about you is tremendously flawed and you need to be ashamed of yourself. So these are the types of families that would say children need to be seen and not heard. And so one of the distinctions that I always make, because people often ask, well, what's the difference between a rigid family and a family that, you know, honors obedience and wants to support that? And I always just talk about the role of discipline. And the root word of discipline is disciple, which means to teach. And so that would be the clear distinction, is when you think back to the discipline that your mother and father offered, was it intended to teach you to understand, oh, this is why I hit my brother, or this is why I was really upset, or this is why I was really sad? Did they help you to understand your life, your sexual life? Or was there a type of rigidity that was really intended to control someone? So what ends up happening in the midst of a rigid family system is that I say that this creates fertile territory for anger to emerge, because you are consistently seeing the hypocrisy of your mother and father. You might see that, you know, on Sundays, your family has it all together, and yet on Saturday, on Monday, they are losing their crap pretty consistently. And they are saying things, just unleashing physical or emotional debris into the house. So that would be a rigid family, creates the context for anger. But then we have a disengaged family system. And what Patrick Carnes's research showed was that 87% of people who struggle with compulsive sexual behavior come from families struggling, or come from families that would be characterized as disengaged. And a disengaged family is like when care is overlooked. So some of my research showed that 50% of people struggling with compulsive sexual behavior did not have a father talk to them, have a mother talk to them at all about sex. 60% did not have a father talk to them at all. So there's this notion that you are completely unprepared for your life. So, you know, pornography, when parents do not educate and equip their children for conversations on sexual health, pornography becomes the primary sex educator of our day. Absolutely. That's a disengaged family system. Yeah. And so I always go back to just this notion of middle school. And I think of middle school as just a prototype of hell. Like, it was just misery for me. And so that sense of when you came home from a difficult day of school, you failed your algebra test, you were made fun of, you had acne, and you just wanted to hide your face. Did you have a mother or a father who were attuned to you, that actually wanted to hold you, wanted to help process through what you were walking through? But most of what we find is that children recognize that care and nurture and connection and delight are not going to be found in the family home. They need to be found outside of the family home or on the internet. And so part of what I say about a disengaged family home is that this creates fertile territory for lust to emerge, that I'm always looking to the outside world to be able to see me, to validate me, to help me process through life. And, you know, as you can begin to see just from those first two family systems, well, pornography can become very appealing to someone growing up in a rigid home. Why? Mm-hmm. Well, it gives them their first experience of freedom without the tyranny of being controlled. So they, you know, might feel powerless under their mother or father, but in the world of pornography, they feel like they can get what they want. Or in the world of pornography, for someone coming out of a disengaged family home, it's the first experience. A lot of my clients will talk about connecting with someone's eyes in a pornography film, and they felt like they had a gaze that they experienced there that they had never had before. And so within disengagement, you learn, oh, I can find sexual pleasure, I can find relational connection through sex. And this is what I have been hungry for. And so again, I'm not trying to excuse anyone's compulsive sexual behavior, promiscuity, unwanted sexual behavior of pornography, but will you begin to at least honor the origin stories that sometimes pornography might be your first surrogate experience of freedom, or maybe your first experience of connection. And so just that same notion of honor and honesty, can you be honest that there is brokenness and sin in your life? And yet at the same time, can you honor that something of your own past sexual history was one of your best attempts to be able to maneuver through some of the pain, rigidity, and disengagement of your life? So that's the two-handed approach that I want people to take. So I'll pause there. I can keep going with the other childhood drivers, but.
No, I think that's a great just teaser, not really a teaser. I thought that was really well, a huge piece to go through just now, but I do want those who are listening to get your book and dive deeper into that for their own healing and their own work that they need to do. Mm-hmm. I'm listening to that and I resonate with it again in my own story in so many ways. And I'm positive that someone who's listening right now is hearing their own story through you explaining the rigid and disengaged family systems. Mm-hmm. And they may be feeling triggered by that right now. I'm realizing, wow, I had no idea that those experiences had shaped my behavior now. Mm-hmm. And they don't know what to do with that information now. So what advice would you give them as a first right step?
I think this goes back to the role of curiosity. So curiosity could be go talk to a friend. Curiosity could be journal. Curiosity could be go see a therapist. All of those things are really good. So when God comes to find people, particularly in the Old Testament, after Adam has just eaten of the tree that he was commanded not to eat from, God shows up and says, like, Adam, where are you? To Hagar, who had just been traumatized by the first family of the faith, God shows up and says, Hagar, where do you come from and where are you going? And so if you find yourself triggered, that's what you should be asking. What are the stories that, you know, as Crystal and I talked, what stories were beginning to emerge for you, and write those down. And you want to build that initial hypothesis of, I wonder if my compulsive use of pornography or my hookups, I wonder if something in my childhood might be connected to that. Like, I wonder if the disengagement and the abandonment that I felt in my home set me up to be able to find some initial experience of connection through sex or through pornography. And so that would just be what I would say, is just allow yourself to be really curious about your stories, your past, and some of those unwanted behaviors that you find yourself stuck within.
Yeah. And I love what you said before too, about, it's not you saying this, but Jesus saying this about, you honor your father and mother to a certain degree, like, you love them, you honor them, but you also have to be willing to face that there was wounding that happened. And it's okay to face the fact that wounding has happened. And it's okay to forgive your parents for that wounding, but you must face the wound in order to heal and move forward. Otherwise, you're going to continue in this cycle of sin and shame and never move forward.
So well said. Yes. Yeah. And why that's so important is, you know, the other key driver that I would just briefly mention in so many women's stories that I work with is some level of sexual abuse. So yeah. Sexual abuse happens on a spectrum. You know, on one hand might be years and years of just rape. But on the other end of that spectrum might be someone who made a comment about your developing body, or maybe being introduced to pornography, or finding your dad's stash, or finding, your older sibling's stash, or being introduced to it by a grandparent. So part of what we have to recognize is, if we grow up in families that tend to be very rigid or disengaged, that's creating fertile territory and soil for us to be able to try to find connection through something else. And so one of the things that I would really invite people into is to understand the origin stories of someone's involvement with something like porn. Like, most people think that they just found it. And yet when you dive into their stories of, well, where did you find this? Mm-hmm. Most of the time, sure, there are stories where you just find a random magazine in the backwoods of some random park. But more often than not, someone introduced it to them or left it in a place that was pretty easy to find. Like, I was working with a client last week who just said, like, it would, you know, she said, you know, my dad's porn was in a very hidden place. And I said, where was it? And she said, you know, next to the laundry room inside of a cabinet. And I said, like, how big was this cabinet? She said, it was huge. And I just said, like, would you say that your parents like hid food in the pantry cabinet because it was behind a door? And just having her grapple with, you know, you can't say that chips or cereal were hidden. Yeah. And then try and excuse or just have that food be totally left in the open and then try and say that your pornography in your home was hidden. So if you begin to step into just the reality of who introduced it to you, what was the story with that? This is just a really big thing where, you know, 1 in 3, 1 in 4 women have past histories of sexual abuse. So many of them will experience some level of sexual assault before the age of 18. And so that would just be just one of those places of, have you studied the ways that your story has been sexually harmed? And how did those initial experiences of sexual harm or sexual abuse go on to create a template for you where you don't feel sexually alive unless you're pursuing sexual content very similar to the way that others may have introduced it to you? And again, just back to that core place of sometimes what happens within pornography or sexual abuse is that we feel a lot of arousal in the midst of these moments.
Yeah.
And I know that might sound counterintuitive, but everybody who abuses us is fundamentally working for our pleasure, as wrong as that sounds, because they want us to feel complicit within the abuse. And so what ends up happening for a lot of us who have past histories of being introduced to porn or sexual abuse is that we hate ourselves for how we felt in some of those moments, that we think, if I had not desired this person, if I had not connected with this neighbor, this peer, then none of this would have happened. And so what gets it really established in sexual abuse is this condemnation of our desire. And then you can see where that story goes. Mm-hmm. Well, if I hate my sexual history and I hate my sexual desire, well, then much later in life, I'm going to be putting myself in positions to reenact that hatred of my desire. So some women hate themselves for their current use of porn, but have never gone back to some of those formative stories where their sexuality was harmed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. That is so, so true. And I will just add on to this for those who are listening right now. I used to say I found porn when I was 10 years old. Found porn at my brother's bathroom. But when I tell my story, I say I was exposed to porn at 10 years mm-hmm. old when I found that magazine in my brother's bathroom.
He was such a good distinction,
you know, because I don't blame him. He was 15. He shouldn't have had it either. But he also didn't put it in a place where I couldn't find it or that it couldn't be found. And so it was clearly just available to me. So I was exposed to porn at the age of 10. And other counselors I've had in the past, and yes, I've had my own counseling, which is very, very important, is that exposure at 10 years old and how graphic the magazine was, it to me caused the same emotional response as a sexual assault or rape to it too, because I was so young and it was so jarring. At the same time, it was so intriguing. It was so exciting. It did awaken my body. And of course, I had so much shame about that, because it's like, why wouldn't I have just thrown this magazine away and told my mom, hey, look what I found? It's because I liked it. And I also hated it. And it's okay to kind of be in that tension of loving the thing you hate and hating the thing you love. And understanding that if you're exposed in that way, it's not your fault that those things happened and that it's okay to forgive those who did it to you, but also understand like that shouldn't have happened, period. And you need to get healing for what that did to you, you know, spiritually, emotionally, physically, and get the healing that you need.
Yes. And I mean, if you're listening, I mean, part of what I know what I do on podcasts when I'm listening to them and I'm like, I need to hear that again, is just hit that 15 second rewind button a couple of times. And to go back to what Crystal said, is so significant of that ambivalence of most of us have not ever said to ourselves, I actually really like this. There's something about this that is compelling, arousing to me. And there's also something about this that I hate. And so what Crystal just did there of like honoring the ambivalence of that teenage girl, like if that's what's happening to us as adults, is we're replaying that ambivalence of I really want this because this is how I learned how to self-soothe. This is where I go to find pleasure in the midst of a life of a lot of ache and loneliness. And I hate that I'm doing this. And so again, just that if you can have that two-handed approach of, yes, I'm doing that presently, but also can you go back to attend to that adolescent girl who was feeling those emotions as well and help her to understand and articulate those emotions? There is so much healing to be had.
Oh, thank you so much, Jay. This has been awesome. I'm so excited to have our listeners hear this. Where can our listeners learn more about your work and your resources?
Sure. So my website is jay-stringer.com. And there are a number of resources there. So I have obviously the book Unwanted that we've been talking about. And then I also created what's called a sexual behavior self-assessment. And this is about 160 questions that's rooted in the research that I did. And it's going to give people compass headings with regard to what stories, what dynamics are actually driving them to compulsive sexual behavior. And so that resource is available just as a self-assessment. And then I also have something called the Journey Course, which is an online course for men and women that is being used in churches and counseling practices, small groups and individual self-studies to really invite women and men to recognize what is the story that they bring into their compulsive sexual behavior. So that's available. And then for therapists and pastors, I run a training program called the Unwanted Guide Training. And back to the notion that I talked about earlier on in the episode of if you're a leader and you have not done your own work to understand your sexual story and your sexual arousal, you're not going to be terribly effective in leading others to do the same. So I train and equip leaders there, and then also run an intensive practice where men and women who are struggling with unwanted sexual behavior come and do about 3 days of work with me to do a deep dive into their story. So, try and have resources for everyone, no matter where you are on this journey.
Thank you so much for that. We will link to Jay's website on our listener notes. So we encourage you to check it out, encourage you to check out his book Unwanted and do that for yourself and do that as an exercise of self-care to really dive into the background of your story so that you can get to a place of freedom in the future. So Jay, thank you so much again for being a part of our podcast.
Crystal, thank you so much for having me and just bringing your voice, your experience to this conversation. It's so needed. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the She Recovery Podcast, a resource of SheRecovery.com. If you enjoyed this episode, I encourage you to share it with those who you think will enjoy it too. You can also visit SheRecovery.com/podcast to find our listener notes for this episode, to submit listener comments or questions, support this podcast, or to learn more about sponsorship and ad opportunities. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you'll join me again next week.